Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 211, Science Faction, the domain.
I knew it. We're going to do euphemisms for dong.
The domain is a euphemism for dong?
Technically, according to Webster's, any mispronunciation of my name is automatically a euphemism for dong.
Domain. Okay, fair enough. Our new intro bit for at least the next 7 weeks is going to be slightly different. We are switching to the taxonomic rankings of biological organisms. So, you guys, we've talked a lot about genus and species, but those of you who have ever looked at an animal know that it has a lot more classifications. It's basically the different divisions we have of living things. Domain is the most basal of those distinctions, meaning it is the furthest back. In fact, it's one that wasn't even recognized until 80s, 90s-ish. And because of that, you guys might have learned in school, in biology class, you might have learned some mnemonics of how to remember the different taxonomic rankings, like King Philip came over from Great Spain. Kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. We now recognize domain as a more basal one, so there's now a D in front of that. And because of that, we decided, as science educators, there is no way we could sit there and allow our audience to not have a good mnemonic to be able to remember the taxonomic ranks. So not only are we going to go through them, but I wanted to give you guys a Science Faction specific mnemonic. So if you ever wonder about this, you can always get it, work it out in your head. So I've created a few.
Should be good.
Yeah. The first one is Damien knows plenty of cocks offer fucking great sex.
I do, but why did it have to be named that?
Do you mean cocks like dongs or cocks like male chickens?
No, definitely cocks like dongs, but Occasionally they're on male chickens, so it can be a double entendre. Damien, don't worry, I got a second one.
Thank you, because that was a bit offensive.
If you didn't want like that one. How about Damien kills podcast comedy on otherwise fucking great science faction? Now, on that one, science faction has to be one word at the end, so you might have an objection there to that.
No, that's where my objection is. That's where my objection is.
And if you guys ever think, like, man, I forgot, what comes first? Is it order or class? I forgot, how does that work? Just think of this show and remember, oh yeah, I remember that Damien knows plenty of cocks offer fucking great sex.
I mean, just off the top of my head, couldn't we have gone with, don't kings play chess on fine grained sand? ?
I would say that, but once again, Damien is killing podcast comedy on otherwise fucking great science faction.
Yeah, I gave you a layup there.
So domain is that most basal of differentiations. It goes all the way back. There's only three domains that we have. We have eukaryote, which is us, plants, animals, anything that has more than one cell, anything that is eukaryotic. Then we have archaea and bacteria. Archaea, not even really discovered until the 1970s. They're very similar to bacteria, but have some noted differences and have a basal enough split that they're in a different domain of life. So we have three domains of life according to the standard biological taxonomic system.
If I ever like become a pop star and go by one name, I think I'm going to... Archaea, I think, is going to be.
First of all, they're badass. They caused the worst extinction in Earth's history during the Permian because their methanogens caused a huge climate change that killed off almost all living things. It made the Cretaceous extinction of dinosaurs
real.
Like nothing.
Climate change isn't real.
Your first album could be Mass Extinction Event.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Archaea with a C with a line through it because I make pennies.
There are some systems that differentiate a little differently. Like I said, archaea wasn't even recognized until the 1970s, and domain itself wasn't recognized until more recently. So some systems that are less accepted will actually just divide into prokaryote and eukaryote. The difference between those, us eukaryotes, we have a cell nucleus that has its own membrane. We have little organelles like mitochondria and other things that all have their own membranes. Prokaryotes, like bacteria, don't have that, neither do archaea. Because of that, we have that really strong distinction between these two groups. But we're going to see these distinctions kind of go further out and further out. Because again, our domain of eukaryote, which, by the way, we don't know when we showed up. When did eukaryotes split off from prokaryotes? When did we evolve? Almost certainly we did so by one prokaryote absorbing another one into it. We know that's how they got mitochondria.
Well, it had to be less than 6,000 years ago.
Yeah,
because that's
of
when
course.
The Earth was discovered.
5,800, probably. All we can say is somewhere between 2 billion and 3.5 billion years ago is when
Fake
eukaryotes
news.
Came out. And literally, it was one prokaryote absorbing another one, which is how we got mitochondria, which is separate, the engine that runs the cell that gives the cell its energy. It literally absorbed a different creature, which is why you have separate mitochondrial DNA than your nuclear DNA.
Well, you say one absorbed another one, but wouldn't it have killed the other one then? Isn't this more like a Power Rangers forming a Megazord?
Yeah, like, it's like a Voltron type thing that pops together.
Wonder Twin powers.
Yeah. All multi-celled creatures are eukaryotes. They're in our domain of eukaryote. But there's also single-cell eukaryotes as well. Just because they're a single-cell creature does not mean they're prokaryotes. That whole classification of having a...
Not all prokaryotes.
Yeah, not all of them.
That's racist.
How dare you generalize?
If you have a cell nucleus that's held in its own membrane and organelles, you are a eukaryote, regardless of how many cells make you up.
Party.
That you're delivering that like you might be a redneck. You might be a prokaryote if...
By the way, some systems actually just branch off in that domain and say, okay, the two domains are archaea and bacteria, and they put eukaryotes and all the rest of us underneath archaea. So there are some different ways, but in general, three domains, we are eukaryotes. We will keep going on, and by the time we end at species S, we will have differentiated from every other living species other than Homo sapiens, and we're going to take that journey. Right now, we're at the point where we branch off from basically bacteria and archaea, and we're still along with everything else.
Wait, you mentioned species S. That was something you said, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is that, like code for Superman? What is species S?
Oh, the S. Remember at the end, which was science faction. We're going to go through each of these letters. The last one is species, so that would be S for species.
Gotcha.
I do like the idea that it's the Superman species, though.
I thought that might have been the most recently discovered species in our domain.
And speaking of the most recently discovered species, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing great. Really hoping that some of our fans can maybe tweet in a different, let's just say a less insulting King's Play Chess on Fine Grained Sand with a D at the beginning.
I'm not familiar with that first thing that you were talking about. I do know that Damian kills podcast comedy on otherwise fucking great science faction.
I'm going to do my best to prove you wrong, Bobo.
And of course, our scientist for the evening, Dr. Allison Gill. Doctor, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm fine. I'm well. Thank you.
And how is your separate podcast, Muller, She Wrote, going?
It's insane. It's blown up. Come check us out at Muller, She Wrote. Follow us. Win a PlayStation.
I must say this. We just report standard stuff in popular science. We take some interesting looks at it. You guys tend to break news, which is really interesting. You tend to actually get ahead of the news cycle. So if politics is your thing and you are interested in this investigation, I highly recommend you check out this podcast because unlike us, you're not just repeating what you would otherwise read on Science Daily. You guys actually seem to dig up dirt of your own.
Well, here we don't have the budget to break science.
Right. I got a lab in the garage doing a bunch of Alzheimer's research.
Oh no, I'm becoming the Hulk again.
We're just back there putting toothpaste on everything.
And if you guys haven't checked out our newly redesigned website, go ahead and check out www.thesciencefaction.com for all the articles we cover here, as well as some we don't get to. And pretty soon you'll be able to see the bios of all of our guest scientists if you get interested in them and you want to get a link to Allison's podcast directly. All right, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, there's a new STD.
Woo!
It's quite common and now increasingly drug resistant.
Boo.
Does it have a name? Do I have it?
Okay, so here's what's funny about it. It's just called, like, it doesn't have like a fun flashy name, you know, like gonorrhea or anything. It's just named by its genus species name. So it's Mycoplasma genitalium. Or
we'll call it Mikey Likes It.
It is funny that was Life Cereal's thing. It's like, what does life give you? STDs. Mikey Likes It. No, but the abbreviation for it, like the short code name, is MG, which has to be just really horrible for you if you're a fan of old British cars. Like, I got MG. All right. No, that one.
Where am I most likely to contract this disease?
Ironically, England. So the...
Wait. The English don't have like a fun British nickname for it? Like, you got the gribbles, I'll say.
Gribbles.
Substitute British name.
Well, the MG was first discovered in the 1980s, early 80s, in London in a few men. And it's basically a bacterial infection. It's not that dissimilar from gonorrhea or chlamydia. The issue is, it's been around for a while. It's one of those things that is fairly asymptomatic or almost completely asymptomatic in men, slightly symptomatic in women. Now, more and more so, we can't treat it with antibiotics. Similar to gonorrhea, similar to chlamydia, we are now having these drug-resistant strains, and they're super scary. Because when you look at drug-resistant STDs, they spread really fast through a community. Before, when they were just bacterial, you could take something and stop that spread, and then it wouldn't go on exponentially, or at least manage what happened. The problem with things like HIV, those viruses that we didn't have antibacterials or anti-anything to stop, is they keep going. And you get it, you can't get over it. You have it indefinitely. Now we're seeing that with bacterial infections, and that's terrifying.
Yeah, that's freaky.
But it doesn't seem to do a lot. I mean, couldn't the gribbles be part of a healthy reproductive microbiome?
It is not part of a healthy microbiome. It does have negative effects, especially can have some on women, which include, you know, like painful urination, some discharge, that kind of stuff. But we also
Tuesday.
Yeah. It might have some effects on fertility. That tends to be the case with some of these STDs. We can't say for sure yet.
All right, so cat shit and MG. Birth control.
It's pretty common in city centers like London. It's fairly common in Australia. And it spreads around probably because it's asymptomatic. Normally, if somebody doesn't have symptoms of something, they're not going to think they have anything. They're not going to treat it. And they're going to have more unprotected sex and spread it even further. That's why these are dangerous diseases.
On a long enough timeline, does it show any symptoms? Because I know some STDs like syphilis don't, right. They are pretty asymptomatic, but then later on you become insane.
And that might be the case. That's a really good point I was going to get to later, which is if you think about what we think of symptoms, it's not just short-term, it's long-term too. HIV doesn't have short-term symptoms, right? That's one of the worst STDs you can get. If you just get it, you won't know it for 5 or 6 years until it destroys your immune system.
Unless you test. Everyone tests all the time.
Yeah, but in cases like this, it could, and especially since we didn't even discover this thing till the 1980s, much less start doing more research and tracking it and stuff, it could be that this has a serious negative effect, especially 5-10 years down the road. And keep in mind, especially with bacteria have the ability for horizontal gene transfer, which means bacteria can exchange genes and do things that other bacteria, sometimes even other non-bacteria, can do by literally stealing little snippets of their DNA and incorporating them in. That's where we got CRISPR technology, from those bacteria. That means that even if this is completely benign, let's get the best case scenario. This is benign, it's antibiotic resistant, but it's not going to do anything to you. Well, that can change any minute. All that has to do is come in contact with another bacteria that has a snippet of gene that does do something bad, like syphilis, and all of a sudden, you have a new STD that can do what this old STD does, and it already has antibacterial resistance.
We need to get Eve on this.
Oh, the computer we discussed last time.
Toothpaste might fix this whole thing. Yeah.
the one that discovered that toothpaste was actually a cure for malaria.
You kind of brushed right over it, but I feel like you're doing the fans a disservice unless you tell them what the STD is called in Australia. And I have to believe it's called a Kadongawangaroo.
That seems like a technical term.
Kadongawangaroo.
I heard that the problem in Australia is that while you give the STD to somebody else, it comes back around and ends up hurting you.
Well, if it can affect fertility negatively, then we should call it a dingo because they steal babies.
Ever since I've had this infection, I've really hated the Aboriginal people of this country, so
I've got the dingoes.
This particular bacteria is actually super interesting for another reason, which is that it's got a very minimal genome. It's got such a minimal genome that one of our show's heroes, Craig Venter, a very innovative biologist that works out of La Jolla here, he was basically the guy who solved the Human Genome Project, also was the first person to create artificial life, and he did so by literally like shooting out A, T, C, and G like you would in a 3D printer, taking a sterile cell, putting a completely falsely made inorganic DNA makeshift strand inside that cell and electroshocking it until it came to life and became a completely artificial Frankenstein type life. He did that with MG. Because it's such a small, simple genome, he was able to replicate this particular one. This is one of the first creatures that was ever artificially created as well.
So we can make MG robots?
They're still biological. They're indistinguishable from a regular MG. It's just that he made it with a printer.
But we can make armies.
We could theoretically make entire clone armies and then
this bullshit terracotta army, like a real fucking army.
You know, if you were super conspiracy minded, you'd be like, wait, you didn't discover it till the 80s. And in 2010, Craig Venter was creating artificial ones. The government must have made this thing and given it to the population. It's how the New World Order is going to control our fertility later on.
Yeah, because the government can't come up with a filing system.
Right.
To hire Illuminatos like Craig Venter.
But very, very interesting thing. It has this interesting history of being kind of recent to discovery, being this major milestone in science where we were able to use this as a blueprint to create artificial life for the first time ever. And then also now, as we're coming into a scenario in which we can't fight this thing, and it's spreading through communities seemingly without us knowing about it. This is not something that's tested for at clinics. This is not something you recognize you have for the most part, but it could be negatively impacting us in a lot of different ways. So this will be a really interesting thing we see further and further on. I guarantee you, you will be hearing more about this bacterial infection later on. Even if it does nothing to us, just the fact that there's a new STD roaming around that's very prevalent in certain places is going to make news.
Yeah, because at any moment it could pick up a gene and become a killer.
Even if it's not a killer, what if it picks up a gene that causes impotence? Like, what if it picks up a gene that causes fucking chicken pox? Who knows? If it causes anything, it's this prevalent, this easy to spread, and completely drug resistant. We can't do anything about it.
If it makes people impotent, they'll find a way to do something about it pretty fast.
Yeah.
I'll take three.
I imagine.
Yeah, give it to registered sex offenders. Make them impotent.
Right. Well, that brings up something. So here's a question. How do you guys think we should fight diseases like this? The ones that are somewhat asymptomatic, already resistant to any kind of antibacterials that we have. What do we do for situations like this?
I know what you think I'm going to say. You think I'm going to say, shrink MMA fighters down, put them in the bloodstream to combat this.
That was actually what I was going for, yeah.
But wrong. Not what I'm thinking.
Right. Because you don't have a good footing to perform any kind of good stand-up once you're in the blood system, why send MMA fighters? Jiu-jitsu guys would be more efficient.
But, I mean, good luck finding a jiu-jitsu fighter trained in scuba combat.
I would take animals and organisms we know to be pretty resistant to disease, like sharks, and see how it affects them. That's probably where
I'd start.
Are you
saying Damien needs to fuck a shark again?
Yeah. Maybe shark could be the S.
SeaWorld better get a competitor, because I ain't allowed in no more SeaWorlds.
A lot of shark fucking.
What about phages? We've talked about phages.
Bacteriophages. That's actually a really good suggestion, weirdly enough. Bacteriophages are viruses that infect bacteria. Before we had antibiotics, this was our only means to fight bacteria. We'd take the viruses that would attack these bacteria naturally and give it to them. Very interestingly, in the Soviet Union, when essentially we walled off part of the world for quite a few decades, they really didn't have access to the same antibiotic treatments we had. So in a lot of those Soviet states, they continued using bacteriophages as their main form of fighting bacterial infections, and did so until the wall came down. And so they actually have a lot of research and technology towards that particular goal. That might be what we have to do in the future.
Smirnov had a whole set about this. Like, in Russia, we don't have antibiotics readily available for population. We have phages.
It's not really a joke. It's just an educational seminar. But we might be in a situation where, you're sick with a bacteria? Cool, take this virus. That's the only way we have to cure it. I don't know what else you would do other than, one, start researching ways to attack it using some kind of CRISPR technology where you say it's resistant to these type of antibacterials. So the way we do it is use CRISPR to cut that resistance out of it, or use CRISPR to change bacteriophages to the point where they specifically target this thing. Because again, you have to find the phage that naturally attacks that bacteria. And if not, you would have to create it.
Wouldn't it be impossible to have a bacterial infection if we could somehow use CRISPR technology to give ourselves acid blood like in Aliens?
So you had acid in your blood, and then because of that, you couldn't have bacteria in your blood?
Yeah, or ever get a cut ever again.
Yeah, that's true. That would be really inconvenient for furniture and just stuff around you. All right, let's go on to article number 2. Just one fag a day may be hurting you worse than we thought.
Man, are we bagging on Patient Zero again, that Montreal flight attendant?
No, Damien, and that's offensive.
I thought we were kicking him while he was down. I was going to physically attack you.
In fact, this is a study that just came out about research into the cardiovascular effects of a single cigarette a day. So a lot of people we know, you're not really a smoker, but you have a cigarette or two a day. That's actually fairly common. It's much more common than is reported. And the common wisdom has been that a cigarette or two doesn't really matter that much. This research wanted to kind of suss that out and look at people over a long enough timeline who were literally smoking one cigarette a day. So they found that men who smoked one cigarette a day had a 46% excess risk of heart disease and a 41% excess risk of stroke associated with smoking. The women who did it had a 31% excess risk of heart disease and 34% excess risk of stroke. Women's heart disease risk was more than doubled with one cigarette a day, and only studies that controlled for several factors were included in the analysis. This is a meta-analysis where they're looking back at a lot of different studies.
That was my question for several factors, because a lot of people who are smokers eat like shit and drink a lot. So, not that I know about any of that.
Right.
But, you know, what other factors could there be? Are these totally clean livers, vegans who smoke a cigarette a day?
Right.
You know?
Just that one. That's their advice. Not just that, but mine, actually, I was thinking of confounding factors as well. And mine was, how honest is the reporting? Because a lot of people who say, I have one cigarette a day, that's three, sometimes five, sometimes 10, you know? But they say one when they're talking to the doctor. And so how do you control for that? These studies, this is a meta-analysis looking back at a bunch of different studies. It's not like they strapped body cams onto these people and had a scientist review and, wait, they had two in a 24-hour period. It's just kind of like self-reporting. I think people chronically under self-report. And then that skews this type of data, because then that tells us, hey, those people that said they only had one cigarette, when they're taking their word for it, they had a lot of damage to their cardiovascular system. So that means one cigarette does that, when in fact it means more than one cigarette does that, and people lie.
What if this was done with a sample population that was more honest? Like, what if they did this in Japan? Like, where I imagine your average Japanese citizen lies to their physician far less than your average American.
Well, here's what I would do. I would put out the call for study subjects that said, all right, are you a vegan that exercises 5 days a week
and
has a cigarette a day?
Yeah.
See how many you get? Because vegans, you can just check on social media. They're not lying. They fucking tell everyone.
Yes, that's true.
Or we can do CrossFitters too.
Does that cigarette paper have lard on it? Because I'm not into that.
Nope.
I know. I feel like CrossFitters kind of got shamed. I feel like vegans, they can't be shamed.
But see, then if you do that, it could be the essential oils that are causing the problems. It's so hard to tell, you know?
One of the things that this brings up, which is a common one I've heard, and Damien and I sometimes listen to a podcast by a guy named Adam Carolla who brings this constant mistake up over and over again. It's one of the things that bother me the most about him.
I hate that.
He constantly talks about how, these cigarette studies, they're all BS. It's not really that bad for you. And they would trout out these studies that are released regularly by the tobacco companies that'll say something like, only 4,000 deaths per year in America from lung disease from cigarette smoke, which is true. They're taking true facts. But here's the thing. The death rate from cigarettes is closer to 50,000. And he will look at that and be like, look, they're lying. It's 1/10 of what they say it is. No, it's the fact that we have a bad idea of what kills you from cigarettes. People think people die from cigarettes from lung cancer. That's a small percentage. Most cigarette deaths are from cardiovascular issues or pulmonary issues like aneurysms, meaning that when you see that number at 5,000, okay, that's about right. Yeah, about 5,000 lung cancer deaths from cigarettes. 45,000 from heart disease, from aneurysms, from other stuff. And so because of that, it brings up a good point, which is...
Adam Carolla, scientist.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, it's please go to get your information from
him. He thinks he's funnier than women. Right now, Adam Carolla, me and you at the Comedy Palace.
Oh, you're going to do a comedy off?
We'll fucking see.
Gauntlet's been thrown down, Adam.
That is one of the biggest misunderstandings, and I think it's an important one, because it also means that a lot of people think, oh, whatever, I'll smoke out these lungs, I'll just get a lung transplant, I'll be fine. Yeah, good luck with your entire pulmonary and heart system. That'll be really easy. But also, it brings up other issues. Like, not only that, we have increased rates of other types of cancers. We have increased rates even of mouth and throat cancers with smoking. And sometimes the situation seems to be like, hey, what about e-cigarettes? These might help.
Nobody knows what the fuck is in those things, man.
Right. Well, right.
Popcorn lung.
And popcorn lung, which we've covered before, is actually a really big problem. Popcorn lung hits much faster than lung cancer. We have essentially zero epidemiological studies that show us how to fix it. And it seems like it'll fucking kill you really fast. It essentially destroys your lungs incredibly quickly. It looks like there is some genetic predisposition involved, because people will get it literally after 6 months of smoking e-cigarettes, and then some people will smoke e-cigarettes for years and not get it. So there's probably some genetic predisposition, but if you're one of those people...
Well, those people have MG.
They got a tiny British car? But if you're one of those people, man, think about that. You're like, oh yeah, I took this up for better health, and I killed myself in the span of a year, you know, like doing something different. So I think those e-cigs are probably not the best answer, though... Maybe that some of them are healthy and they're helping and some of them aren't.
Well, what if I smoke, but I don't smoke for health. I know the health reasons, but if you can name a better way to get a gravelly voice, I'll take you up on it.
Whiskey.
Yeah.
Listen, I'd like to sound a little more like Alec Baldwin. I'm jousting with you comedically on this podcast.
I'm the Bob Dylan of comedy.
Listen, I feel like we could sexualize the show a bit.
So the next one comes up. Okay, well, what else can you do? Is chewing tobacco better? It is. Chewing tobacco has much lower rates of cancer, but you can still get jaw cancer and gum cancer. You can still have issues with that. Now, the mortality rate is much lower. The chance of getting cancer overall is much lower. The effects to your cardiopulmonary system is essentially zero. But there are still some dangers. So technically, if you wanted to upgrade from smoking, you could go to chewing tobacco. Lifestyle might kind of take a hit. You're drinking a lot more Mountain Dew and stuff. But yeah, you can do it for your health.
This cigarette argument, like how it's not really, it kind of reminds me of like the gun argument. Like guns don't kill people. Right. Heart disease kills people.
But you could do some other safe options like nicotine gum, the patch, and any non-substance alternatives, things like, you know, hypnotism therapy, just cold turkey, whatever you call it.
There's something new coming out, the heat stick, I've heard. It's a thing where they...
First of all, that's not new. That's an old video we made a long time ago.
I don't want to hear about cocks. Where they, I don't know, it's some new, very, very new. I just heard about it this week. They haven't even started studying it, I don't think. But it's basically like a vape, but instead of the liquid chemical and instead of vapor, it's they're heating up tobacco.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, that's a standard vaporizer. That's what vaporizers used to be. And that they use that whenever they do cannabis studies, they use a standard vaporizer because it's the safest way next to eating to be able to ingest it, because all you're getting is, if you're doing it properly, you're getting warm air with the active substance, either nicotine or THC, without actually burning it, so you don't get the combustibles that get in your lungs.
Yeah, so they're trying to sell that now.
Which brings up a good point, which is smoking pot does that too. It's not as bad for you as necessarily as smoking tobacco, mainly just because you don't ingest as much smoke.
The chemicals in the smoke, yeah.
Well, yeah, and it's just the volume, you know. But realistically, if you are...
I don't know. I've seen some dudes.
Yeah, but think about it.
You ever seen Michael Phelps take a bong hit, man?
Yeah, but think about it.
That's some volume.
Think about it. They're just smoking, like, and unless they're smoking literally every hour, like people do when they smoke a pack or two of cigarettes a day, you're just not ingesting that much substance. Anytime you're taking combustibles into your body, into your lungs, you have the chance of causing cancer and you're doing damage to your lungs. It doesn't matter what you're burning.
Wouldn't it be safer to take nicotine or pot as a suppository?
I don't know why you keep bringing this up, because again, we just talked about edibles or vapor, a whole bunch of other safe alternatives.
Listen, I've smothered this cannabis oil all over this condom, but this is a two-man operation. I need your help.
And of course, there are all the non-substance options, things like like we talked about, hypnotism, quitting cold turkey. There's a lot of different programs that
you can collars. Do.
I also find something really interesting, which is cigarettes are something we offer to people, maybe even push on people in Alcoholics Anonymous. When people go to AA, at the table, they have coffee and cigarettes.
Better than heroin.
Maybe, but you know what? It's still going to kill you. Like, it is funny that we go, hey, this drug is really bad for you. We need to get you off this drug. Please take this other drug that will ultimately kill you in a different way.
I don't think for AA people, it's so much the actual booze that kills them. It's the ending up in the gutter and getting their head run over by a car.
True.
Which doesn't really happen with smoking as much. I think that's probably the justification.
And I get that. But still, you are inevitably, I always think of it this way. If you get somebody to start smoking, you're essentially giving them what will eventually kill them. If they continue smoking.
Looking at you, armed forces.
Yeah, I was about to say, Allison, you and I can talk about this. But Jesus, if you can get through the armed forces, if you can get through a stint in the service without having a kid or picking up smoking,
right,
you win.
Or a husband.
I had three, sister.
Yep, suppositories.
Or having a kid who smokes that you eventually marry. I don't know, combine all three. But that is funny to me that in AA we push that on people. Like that, I kind of think they should take that part of it out and be like, listen, I know you got some weird tendencies. Here's a vaporizer with some weed. Just get out of here. Don't do the cigarettes.
What addiction could you give them? Because they're swapping.
The coffee is fine. The coffee thing is fine.
Coffee is tough to you know, be a substitute for booze. As an addiction.
Maybe chocohol. You have like a lot of middle-aged women like, ooh, maybe here's some bonbons.
DMT? I don't know. Just anything.
DMT, for sure.
But regardless, it is really interesting. Here's what I would say to you guys then. How do you guys think we should get people to stop smoking?
Like, I don't know. I smoke, so I'm not the right person to ask. But, you know, I do run. I jog. Yeah. I do 5Ks. I do half marathons. I got a 98 blood ox. That's no excuse. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to my best to keep my cardiovascular right. health up as a counteraction to the fact that I got hooked on cigarettes when I was in the Navy. So
yeah.
That's, you know.
It's a super strong addiction. A lot of times, so there are these interesting scientific studies where people report quitting cigarettes are almost as hard as quitting heroin, which mm-hmm. is one of the things I think is funny that they give it to you in AA because they're like, here's a drug that's almost impossible to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know that we have to do anything. I mean, I kind of like the way it's going. Less people are smoking now. In fact, as a non-smoker, it's kind of become cool to smoke again. Just the right percentage of people are doing it.
Right.
Where you're like, they know the risks. God damn, they're cool.
I'm no, fucking vintage.
Yes. No wonder Allison's such a badass. All right, guys, let's move right on to I Call BS.
I call.
I call.
I call.
I call.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I call BS.
All right, guys, this is everybody's favorite game, I Call BS, where I read four science news articles. My panelists compete to see which ones are real and which ones are BS, standing for bad science. Allison, are you ready? Coming back off a perfect score.
Oh, my God, I'm so
perfect
ready.
Perfect score.
I'm so ready, Robert.
Demolishing Damien.
Well, we tied. We both got perfect score.
No,
Allison
won
because this game's rigged.
We won.
You had negative one going in. You had
Allison has gerrymandered this country.
She did it with her kick-ass smoking. All right. Article number one. Researchers have discovered orangutans in the wild self-medicating to treat their achy bodies. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science, but they don't want you to find out about it because they're actually using Tiger Bomb made from another endangered species.
Oh, so they killed another animal in order to...
They know what makes them hypocritical for about this palm oil shit they're complaining about.
I don't think they make Tiger Bomb out of tigers.
Yeah, right.
They grind up real tigers
not
at the tiger factory.
First of all, that's assuming a lot. It's not all orangutans who do that. There's just one, like, Martin Scorelli orangutan who has discovered this and is exploiting the system. All right, and Allison.
Self-medicating orangutans. I thought Trump was a teetotaler.
That's also offensive. That is his mother, not him.
Oh, so sorry.
Not. We are not our parents.
Well, she's a dirty immigrant, so she needs to get out of here. I'm going to say that we're close enough to them. Actually, I think they're our closest cousins, right?
No, chimps.
Chimps? Oh, well, fuck it.
But they're pretty close.
Well, I still think they self-medicate.
Okay.
They go to AA meetings.
Smoking orangutans.
Maybe that's why Trump is so pro-wall, is because it'll do very little to keep out the orangutans.
You know, the smoking orangutan is interesting because we actually covered a story a few years back, what you'd call a horror story, of a village in, somewhere in Southeast Asia that had chained
some
up...
Some shithole country.
Yeah, some shithole. Well, you'll think of them like that after this. They had chained up an orangutan, shaved it, and was using it as a prostitute for all the local villagers, and it would be forced to have sex like 30 times a day.
And it wasn't Donald Trump.
Nope.
Damn it.
Again, it was his mom. Stop conflating
Sorry.
The two.
That's where he came from.
Did they have somebody custom sew like a really short skirt meant for the orangutan? Like, was it out pimping on the streets? Was it have high heels? How accountable was it for its role at the end of the night?
I just hope they gave it a cigarette at the end. All right, article number two. Evidence from the only live giant squid to surface outside of Japanese waters show that it was driven into the shallow area by noises from boat propellers. Damien, is this science or bad science?
Do you think the orangutan had to say no kissing on the lips, or was it kind of implied? Bad science. Driven to the shore by Godzillas.
But this is outside of Japanese waters, Damien.
Okay, well then that ruins my other answer, which was tentacle porn. I don't know. It just was in shallow waters.
All right, and Allison.
So you're saying that the propellers out further drove them into the shallow waters because they were getting away from the propeller noises?
Yes.
Then I'm going to say bad science because there's lots of propellers close to the shore.
Ooh, good reasoning. Article number three, new research suggests curry may alleviate the effects of Alzheimer's disease. Damien, is this science or bad science?
I'm going to say science because perhaps it's my lack of cultural diversity in France, but I can't say I know an old Indian dude or lady mm-hmm. with Alzheimer's.
Oh,
so
fair enough. You don't know any old Indian dudes, but still.
Well, they call it maize.
God damn it. That's the wrong Indian. You can't even do it that way. Fuck. All right, Allison.
I'm going to say science because I want it to be.
Okay.
And also, if you've ever lived near a curry place, you'll never fucking forget that smell.
That's true. Little did you guys know, you should have asked more questions. I was referring to Warriors player Steph Curry. He completely keeps that Alzheimer's away. All right, and lastly, article number four. New research has found that when you move your eyes, you move your eardrums too, even if no sound is present. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science. Additionally, if what you're looking at is attractive enough, your jaw will unhinge, tongue will fall out of your mouth, and your eyes will shoot out of your head. Oh, fuck you guys. They can't all be gold. Like, kiss my ass. I do this show every week for 211 fucking episodes.
Ooga.
I'm allowed to shit the bed several times an episode at this point. It's in my rider.
Clearly you do. As we talked about before, you ruin comedy on this podcast. And Allison.
I'm going to say, like the old Tucker automobile, where the headlights move with the steering wheel, I'm going to say this is science.
All right. The Tucker torpedo, where the center headlight moved with the steering wheel. Very deep cut there, Allison.
Thank you.
All right, let's go back.
Relevant.
Let's go back and see how you guys did.
She's so cool, smoke with cigarettes like a gearhead.
Follow along at home and see how you did. Article number one, researchers have discovered orangutans in the wild self-medicating to treat their achy bodies. Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is science. We reported on the initial observation a few years back that we saw the orangutans chewing this stuff up and spitting it on their bodies, but we didn't know exactly what it was. Follow-up studies have found out that what they're chewing is called Dracaena cantel, which is actually an anti-inflammatory, and they're chewing it up, spitting it on their limbs and bodies, especially moms carrying babies, because it's aching muscles. What's really interesting is the native tribes people are doing the same thing.
Well, which came first?
Exactly! So what is a chicken and egg thing? Which one of these saw the other one doing it? It's like that age-old bumper sticker, who rescued who?
So wait, tribes people in the area are treating their pain by rubbing ointment on an orangutan?
Yes, Damien, that is true, but also they're doing it themselves. And you might say, yeah, but maybe you're just inferring this, you're anthropomorphizing these creatures, they're just chewing it because they're hungry. It's actually an inedible plant that's incredibly bitter. They can't eat it. It is painful and annoying for them to chew it. They're doing it just for the effect they get on their bodies, which is kind of cool.
Smart, smart.
Article number two, evidence from the only live giant squid to surface outside of Japanese waters show that it was driven into the shallow area by noises from boat propellers. Both of you guys thought this one was false, and this one is bad science. Allison, you used some very good deductive reasoning. There was actually another clue in there, which is that giant squid, as you guys may know, live in very, very, very deep waters. They actually live beyond the physical boundaries that sound would travel from something like a boat propeller because they're so deep. But I do like your reasoning, too, that there is less noise down there than there would be in shallow waters. We reported on this initial observation a few years back, but there was a giant squid that surfaced in Spain in 2016 into the shallow waters. It was still alive when it did so. It then later beached itself as it died.
Did they name him Columbus?
No, that was an Italian squid that was just sailing under the Spanish. Never mind. It was a young female juvenile. It was alive when it was in the shallow waters, but then basically
beached itself.
She just
wanted to get the hell out of her house, okay?
I want to marry Prince Eric.
By the way, a small juvenile, 230 pounds.
She was a goth girl then.
Nah, she's just super into softball. She made her way onto land and died, unfortunately, and they wanted to look at what killed her. There was all these different ideas. They did a bunch of very thorough research on the marks on her body and found that they were from the suckers of a large giant squid. So she had been...
Sexual predator.
Yeah, probably. There are these basically schools of fish that come through the area, and the giant squid come and hit these fish. And when they do, if there's enough giant squid doing it, the giant squid themselves will fight amongst each other, and it looks like that's what happened. One of the large giant squid essentially fucked up this smaller giant squid enough that it got disoriented, went into shallow waters. And what you might not know is the temperature differential, the warm to cold differential, because it's much cooler in the lower strata of the ocean, actually fucks with their metabolism. So if a giant squid comes to the surface and doesn't get back down quickly enough, it will die.
Oh, I thought they were just going to lose weight and get toned.
So it came up because it was all disoriented and then basically got stuck in shallow waters and died because of the temperature and pressure differentials.
Because it's a deep sea animal, if it went up to shallow water, would it also feel like super strong for a really
like
short
if we went
period
to the
before
moon?
It died?
Yeah, exactly. Well, because it doesn't have all the pressure coming on it at all times. It also belongs to an interesting family, the cephalopods, which I think are worth mentioning. That includes things like octopus and stuff. And this is part of a larger family that also includes like snails and mollusks. And it's really funny because snails and mollusks basically don't have a brain. They're so dumb. But the range is so big because octopus is actually one of the smartest animals on Earth. If you took out primates, it would be like octopus, gray parrot, and dolphin would be competing for the smartest animals. So it is funny that they have this wide range, and squids seem to be somewhere in the middle where they display some really weird, unusual intelligence, but they're also, like, if you look at the Humboldt squid, they're just straight-up savage killers, you know? And it's this mixture of mindless, brainless killing and one of the smartest things on the face of the earth.
Super smart.
You say octopi are really smart, but most of them believe in a flat earth and are anti-vaxxers.
Oh, are they really?
Fucking idiots.
Stop hanging out on octopi. octopus Reddit, first of all.
They're super smart. We should have like emotional support squid.
The problem with octopus Reddit is you can never get a word in edgewise because they can type way faster than you. Just eight limbs.
The problem with octopus Reddit.
Ink up their keyboards like crazy, though.
I also use them as evidence, by the way, whenever... This is what I hate alien stories, when they show like a bipedal hominid-looking thing coming out. And I'm like, if something evolved on a different planet, the chances of it looking anything like us are so small. If you take out primates and an alien from Earth ended up leaving in millions of years, it would look like an octopus or a gray parrot or something like that.
That's why I like Arrival so much. Yeah, did you see that one?
That's very true.
With the big... Mm-hmm.
They were very cephalopod-looking themselves.
They were cephalies.
Article number 3, new research suggests curry may alleviate the effects of Alzheimer's disease.
Oh, please, oh, please, oh, please, oh, please.
Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is science.
Yes.
And pretty interesting. So previous epidemiological studies have noted that people in India, where curry is eaten almost daily, have a demonstrably lower rate of Alzheimer's disease among same age populations as those in Western countries.
So I'm not racist.
You're still racist.
Oh, okay.
That doesn't alleviate that. And previous studies have shown that curcumin, which is the active ingredient in curry, reduces inflammation. So there was a thought that there's an inflammation that's associated with certain forms of Alzheimer's disease. It's reducing that brain inflammation and therefore preventing Alzheimer's disease. So the researchers wanted to try a double-blind placebo study to try it. Now, caveat, low sample size. 40 individuals on your end number.
To be fair, it's hard to find people in India.
Yeah, that's right. There's not that many of them. They're a rare breed.
They're pretty scarce.
Yeah, it's like India and people from Easter Island. Like, where you can't get either one of those guys around. So the 40 subjects received standardized cognitive assessments at the start of the study and at 6 months intervals, and monitoring of curcumin levels in their blood at the start of the study and after the 18 months. 30 of the volunteers had PET scans to determine the levels of amyloid plaques in their brain, which is, again, a sign of Alzheimer's disease.
Is that like a scan where Caesar Milan rubs his hand from the base of your skull down your back?
Well,
like
first he has to show you he's the dominant one in the room before he gives you the scan. People who took the curcumin experienced significant improvements in their memory and attention abilities, while the subjects who received placebo did not. So one of the like weird side notes that I want to think of, what placebo are you going to use for curry? Like, what could you possibly use that would convince somebody that they're actually taking... Like, you're just going to like burn tires and then have them eat that? Like, there's nothing that's going to taste or smell the same.
Probably in a pill form. And you know how you can put things in a pill form where you can't, like, I take garlic pills. You can't tell it's garlic.
I feel like curry is just so strong you would tell no matter what. You like, you would burp and you'd be like, why does it smell like I just ate like a bunch of shoes?
Well, could you extract the you know, the whatever the active ingredient in curry is? And
they
maybe
must
it has
have.
No flavor or scent?
They must have. It just seems
like
to me.
Like iocane powder?
It just seems to me curry is one that's really hard to come up with a placebo for.
Yeah. Curry tastes a lot like used curry. So, I mean, like, there's an endless supply of used curry.
That's true. And lastly, article number 4, new research has found that when you move your eyes, you move your eardrums too, even if no sound is present. Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is science, meaning Allison got a perfect score 2 weeks in a row! 2 weeks in a row, she walks into Damien's house and makes him look like a fucking child.
This is bullshit.
A child!
For 2 weeks, she's drafted behind me the entire race.
Oh, just brutally beating Damien with a perfect score. You can't beat him any harder than that.
You know what? I don't regret how mean to you I was in our younger years. I stand by it. If this is the consequence of that, so fucking be it.
Well, is it because of the Tucker automobile? Because I should get extra points for that.
I was racist to an accurate degree on the last question. Plus, I had a super funny joke on that fourth question.
I like how you yell that you were racist. So, like, she's like, wait, is it because I mentioned the Tucker automobile? And Damien's like, is it because I acted like Tucker Carlson?
My bow tie game is way more on point.
So it's really interesting because I didn't, personally, I'm going to admit something here. I didn't even know we moved our eardrums. Like, I didn't know we had some kind of ability to change the I thought just sound moved our eardrums. But apparently, you inadvertently do move your eardrums both to kind of switch it to the frequency you're hearing and for echolocation purposes. Your eardrums inside your head, I'm not saying you're moving your head around, your eardrums themselves will move around through autonomic functioning.
An owl can move their eardrums 180 degrees.
That is not true. One of the interesting findings of this research is that the ears actually move before the eyes. So a stimulus happens before the eyes move to follow it, the ears inadvertently move with it, indicating that this is an autonomic function that's tied in your brain with eye and ear movement synchronized, and you're not controlling this voluntarily, but your brain is automatically going, we need to track something. We're going to do it the most efficient way possible. Move quickly.
What if you see it before you hear it, since light moves faster than sound?
It happens even when there's no sound.
Motherfucker!
They did this in a dark room with LED lights. Your head is completely stationary, and they move the LED lights. They noticed that not only did your eyes track to move it, your eardrums track to move it, and the eardrums signaled before the eyes did.
That's weird.
Even with on only visual stimulation.
So if I see lightning, I can't confirm it. My body can't react until like the thunder hits like 3 seconds later.
I wonder if being exposed to artificial light over eons is going to diminish that.
We're not going to do it as much because we only have visual stimuli instead of audio. That'd be interesting. And I'd also wonder if you can kind of tone
like the
it down.
Like the further away we get from being hunters.
Yeah. That's an interesting point. I think maybe a modern version of that would be you take a hunter-gatherer who's 50 years old and has lived his entire life in the bush. You do this test with him versus like a computer programmer who just sits there and types. And I wonder
if
there'd
be a difference. Who will never live his life in any bush. I'm sorry, coders. I love you. I'll sleep with you.
Well, I prefer a tentacle penis more than anything.
I do.
All right. Congratulations, Allison, on that demolishing of Damien.
Thank you
just
so much.
Brutal. 2 weeks in a row.
No, I got the popular vote. The fucking Electoral College gave this to Allison.
Shush.
Not my president.
Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 211, where you learned why Damien knows plenty of cocks offer fucking great sex.
Irrelevant.
Why there's a new STD and how it's increasingly drug resistant. How one cigarette a day does more damage than we previously thought. How orangutans are self-medicating. Why a giant squid beached itself in Spain. How curry could cure your Alzheimer's disease. And why your eardrums move along with your eyes. Thank you so much for joining us. Check out Mueller, She Wrote, and come on back for Science Faction 212.
If you thought catching an unknown STD was bad, try getting it from a hoary orangutan.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.